Welcome to PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno. I'm joined today by my good friend, Nadia Keita.
Hello.
How are you today, Nadia?
Ooh, good. How are you doing, Mike?
I'm fantastic. Nadia, may I ask you, what does a raven and a writing desk have in common?
Well, they've both been used in this stupid riddle for 200 years, and we just will not let it go.
Right. That's correct. Today, we are talking about the 1988 film Alice. This is a Czech film. Its Czech title is, and I don't know how to pronounce this correctly, something like Niko Zelensky, which according to Wikipedia loosely translates into something from Alice.
Okay. Oh.
So this movie was directed by Jan Svankmajer, who is a he's an animator, but he's a stop motion animator. He did a lot of things with claymation. You may have seen stuff he's done online and before. This is, I think, his only or his first feature-length film, and it's based on Lewis Carroll's Alice in Wonderland. But it does its own things in very interesting ways. It's not in English, it's in Czech. It stars Kristina Kohoutová as Alice. She's also the only one who speaks. She narrates it as well as plays Alice. If people do know this movie, it's often referred to as like the taxidermy Alice in Wonderland, because it uses taxidermied animals in the stop motion as the animals from the story. But that's not just a behind the scenes thing. It is part of the narrative. They are taxidermied. Taxidermy is a theme in this movie. So Nadia, when did you first see this film?
It's been years. I think this is because, I had to get a master's degree in film. At some point I became obsessed with just looking for the weirdest things they could find.
Uh-huh.
And Alice was one of them. I definitely watched Svankmajer. I don't know.
Yeah.
One of his short films, I can't remember the title, but it was basically like these two clay heads, and they were just like talking and then also like kind of melding together and changing.
Yeah.
And that was weird enough. And I was like, I have to see some more of this guy's stuff. And that's how I found Alice. I think it was on YouTube, which I found again to do this podcast. Yeah. Watch it again. Still on YouTube. People don't care about it.
Yeah. No,
really, very surprising, right?
Yeah, it's like totally preserved on YouTube.
So I watched it years ago, and it hasn't like quite left my mind. I still think about it as the taxidermy Alice in Wonderland, like when I try to use a shorthand.
Yeah,
but it's also, there's more than just taxi. Like a lot of the creatures actually aren't taxidermy; they're like puppets or toys
or live
at one point there's or socks. They're like stuff that you could find in a house, and I think that's what really interested me the most, is because if you look at the baseline of Alice, right, the storyline, and there are many different adaptations of Alice in Wonderland, but it all kind of starts out the same, where she falls asleep while listening to some story.
Yeah.
And then she's transported into quote unquote Wonderland. And in this case, it's like the Wonderland isn't so much a totally different world, but it's like her own world in a making, where things are coming to life that she's exposed to. So I guess the long story short, it's been a few years, but that's found on YouTube.
Well, yeah, you started to get into it. Like the way I think of this is, this movie reminds me in a sort of melancholy way of like when you're a little kid and you're kind of bored in your house. And you're kind of imagining things and fantasizing things, but you're still like just laying on the carpet. That's kind of what it reminds me of, because it's all inside. Even though some scenes take place outside, it's still really inside. It's all about within her domestic world. She goes from room to room to room, but it's all the same room with its kind of dirty old, you know, fashioned walls and wood floor and tiny little wooden desk. And it's very tactile in a way. Like, this movie is all about wood and rocks and silver and tacks and hammers and tools and writing desks. It's all very like workshoppy in a way. I guess the best way to do it is to actually just kind of like go through it. Like, I kind of wrote kind of beat for beat what happens, because there's really no other way to go through it, honestly. It's a mostly silent film. It does have narration of the little girl telling the story. And whenever she speaks, we actually see an extreme close-up of her mouth, which sort of implies to us that she's not narrating from the scene. She's narrating from another place, like narrating from the future, or she's telling it as a story.
Mm-hmm.
And all the voices are hers. So even when something else speaks, it's her voice coming out of their mouths. It begins with, it's outside. We see a beautiful stream. Alice is a little ragamuffin. She's a little dirty girl. You know, she wants to run and jump and get in trouble and stuff. We see her, sort of, I guess, on a river or by a lake with her, you don't know who, an adult. We don't see the adult's head. And the adult is reading a book, and Alice is just sort of sitting there. And as the credits begin, she starts narrating to the audience. She speaks between each title card of like the director and the writers. So during the opening credits, she says, "Alice thought to herself." That's the first line of the movie. "Alice thought to herself, now you will see a film made for children. Perhaps, but I nearly forgot, you must close your eyes. Otherwise, you won't see anything." I love a movie that starts by saying, okay, close your eyes or you won't see anything.
Yeah, that was interesting. It definitely, like you were saying, it puts you in that place of being a child who's bored, right?
Yeah.
So I think a lot of movies that are about children are, you know, I'm talking anecdotally, the ones I've seen, it kind of is almost like cutesy or innocent in a right. way. But Alice doesn't feel that way.
Yeah,
she feels
yeah.
like a kid who's bored.
Yeah.
And is just trying to make the best of wherever she is. I noticed, like, you don't see the adult's head, but it's like some woman in a dress, right? So it could be an older sister, it could be a, you know, mother, aunt, yeah. grandma, whatever. But I thought that was really weird. And I realized I've never actually seen a movie like that before, where you only see a character cut off by their head, and it's just like the body. And it's like from Alice's point of view, it's smaller, right? Like, or like the frame is shorter or down.
Yeah. It kind of implies like this is just a kid's world.
Yeah.
For the first two, other than the mom, all the grown-ups in E.T., you don't see their faces until the very end. So it's, and then I always think of like Muppet Babies. You don't see the nanny's face. I guess it just sort of puts you in the mindset of like, this is the world of children.
Or Peanuts, right? You never see the grown-ups in Peanuts.
Or hear them.
Or hear them either, yeah.
Yeah.
And what Alice was doing, which made me think she was bored, is that she's throwing rocks, like, into the river and into even, like, a cup of tea.
Yeah.
And, like, then, like, the woman has to scold her, like, knock it off, right?
Right.
And that kind of put me in a place where, like, Alice is kind of like, I'm bored. I don't want to be here. I want to be in my own place. So could you tell, just in general, like, what time period this was supposed to be? Because it was kind of hard for me. There was nothing that said anything of the last, like, 50 years.
No.
I was thinking of, like, the wooden toys.
Right.
I was thinking of all the workshop materials everywhere. It just felt like we were kind of out of time.
Well,
in the clothing that they wear is nondescript.
It feels, quote-unquote, old-fashioned, Well, Alice in Wonderland is written, is published in 1865, and this movie's made in 1988. I don't think it's as early as 1865, because there's electric lights and stuff, but there's something very plain. It reminded me of like Little House on the Prairie. Like there's something very, very plain about the dresses they wear. I would say maybe like a rural early 20th century, like in a rural setting. Because there's
because there isn't, and I was trying to like, and I could have missed something, but even there was barely any decor. It almost seemed like everything was more functional.
Yes.
If that makes sense. Like every object had some sort of function, right? There were like kitchen items, there was workshop items, there was little kid room items. And like she goes through different rooms of, you know, but it's essentially a house. She's kind of at a place and everything is something that might be found in the house. But then there's also, like you mentioned, the taxidermy animals, which to me does not signal, does not necessarily signal like almost plain, but perhaps one of the adults that she lives with is someone that's an amateur scientist or a collector, or maybe that was used to help teach her. Because again, we don't know what her world is like outside of this house.
Well,
and maybe her education is at home.
The very first room that we find her in after the credits are done and we're back inside, or we're first inside, I believe that's like a taxidermy workshop, because you see in it, you see the white rabbit taxidermied in like an aquarium, but you also see around it all sorts of tools. You see a desk, you see wood chips, you see scissors and thread, you see rocks. It's definitely you see little I don't know if taxidermy is the right word, but like, you know, like when they put like dead insects on like a frame thing, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you're right. And now I'm thinking about it, there was a scene where there was just a bunch of protractors on the floor when she, one of the times where she's like by the desk, when she goes into desks like what, 3 or 4 times in this movie?
Yeah.
That was like a weird recurring thing.
Yeah, desk is absolutely a recurring thing. Yeah, there's no, like she doesn't, in the book, she falls down a hole. And in this, at one point when she goes through a desk and she doesn't fall down a hole, she's then in an elevator, which again is like machinery. There's a lot of like machinery and apparatus and it feels like a grown up world that's kind of plain to her. You know, like this isn't a colorful movie, as beautiful it is. It's not a colorful movie. Even like the dress she wears, it's not like the Alice in Wonderland blue of the Disney animated film. Like it's this very like, you know, beige dress. It's all very beige and brown and kind of earth colors.
Yeah, I would say like industrial, right? It's like everything's kind of industrial in a way.
Yeah.
Even though the house itself also seems, and from where she is by the river at the beginning, it's like she's removed from something that's urban.
Yeah.
But yeah, now that you mention it, yeah, it's definitely like whatever, one of the adults is a taxidermy specialist, amateur. Right. So they're doing taxidermy.
Right.
And the one that we get the closest view of is the rabbit.
Right.
Which I saw as like, I think one of my favorite parts is when the rabbit pulls himself out of the taxidermy exhibit.
Right.
And you see the little like screws in his feet, like when he was screwed down.
Out. Right.
And he like rips himself open. So it's like he's aware that he is a product or something. Right. And there's just sawdust. And that's where he keeps his watch, is inside of his chest cavity.
Right. And whenever he takes his stopwatch out to be like, oh, I'm late. There's always the sawdust on it. And then he'll like eat it, so it goes back inside of him. And then there are times where he sews himself back up. So he's very aware of his own taxidermied life. And one of the first sort of surreal things you see, well, he's moving, so that's surreal. But one of the first interesting things you see is in its little exhibit, it pulls up from the ground a drawer, and it's the desk drawer, but it's coming vertically up, which is another, the desk and the drawer are like, is a motif that's constantly sort of rang throughout this whole thing of what's in the drawer. And it's often something metal or something wood. And I believe in this time it's like scissors. And he breaks out of the glass and he's like, oh, I gotta go, I gotta go. And this is sort of the beginning of, you know, this is the sort of classical opening of Alice in Wonderland, right? The hair. But what's interesting is the hair in this is like, he's not scary, but he's a taxidermied animal. He's not cute in any shape, you know? And he's actually, I think, pretty antagonistic towards Alice.
Oh, yeah. He's kind of, like, mean to her. And at one point, he does try to attack her. Like, actually, right. Multiple times to stop her from following him. And
yeah.
I mean, I'm trying to compare it to what I remember from the Disney film. Not watched that since I was a kid. But in that case, he wasn't antagonistic so much as just ignoring her. Just kind of like, I don't care, right? I just have to do what I gotta do. But in this one, he's like ignoring her. And then she just keeps asking him, like, she keeps saying, please, sir, like, wait or stop. And he just gets annoyed at her.
Right. He's sort of, he really is the antagonist until the end when we meet the queen. Because she's
and the king. In this one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because in the original story of Alice in Wonderland, it's the king and queen, and they're both antagonistic in kind of different ways, though the queen is a little more aggressive, and I think Disney ran with that and just kind of like had her as the antagonist.
Interesting.
But yeah, right up until the end, the rabbit is like the worst character or the meanest character.
In that
okay,
first room
so...
that we see her in the first room we see her in, if you look around her, it's all of the things that she's going to meet. There's the blocks that end up being like the block, the house that she goes into. There's, you know, the cookies. There's the little doll that she turns into, like kind of like as if this is like what her is going to go into her subconscious. Like everything around her that she's sort of playing with is the stuff that then comes back in the movie.
That was interesting.
What do you think about Alice? What do you think about the little girl in the movie?
I think it's an aspect that she's a bored kid who gets in a little trouble. And I also think there's something so not, I don't even know if there's a term for this, non-sentimental, not innocent. She's just very like, you know, she just wants to get into things and she wants to figure them out and she gets herself in trouble. And I kind of like that. There's something it's like this movie is unsentimental. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, it reminds me a little bit of Maurice Sendak's Where the Wild Things Are, because she's a little bad. You know, she's inside throwing rocks in a teacup. She's, you know, her dress is dirty because she obviously doesn't care about how she looks. She cares about having fun and doing things. You know, even when she meets the king and queen at the end, she's kind of rude to them. She's all about, I'm going to take something and I'm going to eat these cookies. She's got the sort of rambunctious, she's not innocent. You're right. She's not innocent. She's a little rambunctious little like kid. She's interested in things, and she's not and I think the kid who plays her is cute, but I also like that her face is sort of like, a lot of times it's just sort of like, yeah, I'm just doing this, but you know what I mean, she's just going through it. She's like, oh, what the hell is this,
right? Yeah, there's something like so not family friendly about this movie. Like there's no you know, the usual, there's no violence or cursing or nudity of any kind, but it's, which I can, usually those are the, like, the indicators of when something's not a family-friendly movie. There's nothing really depressing or tragic, but it's, there's right. something about it, it's also not family-friendly. It's like a reminder that children can be bad, and it's not, and they don't get punished. She doesn't get punished for any of this. I mean, she gets herself in situations, but it's and she's not rewarded either. It's just kind of like the snippet into her little psyche,
right?
For an afternoon.
It really fits into like the original Alice in Wonderland's like celebration of nonsense and just absurdity. It's just super weird. And I believe I saw this for the first time as a kid. Like, I don't, I probably, it was probably just on cable or maybe HBO, or something like that. Because I know I remember catching a little bit of it throughout my childhood. And it wasn't until much later that I like stopped and actually like watched it and understood what it was. Because there was an American English dub that became popular here. I mean, this is the rare Czech film that breaks through in America and people know. So I probably as a kid saw the English dub, which is very easy to do because there's really not that much talking in it. So it's super easy to just dub it in English. So I would say, oh, this would probably scare a kid. But I know when I was a kid, it didn't scare me, but it did, you know, infect me with melancholy. You know, it doesn't have. We're going to keep comparing it to Disney because Disney is this sort of obvious metaphor, not just for this story, but also for like children's entertainment. But like, it doesn't have that Disney like happiness to it. Like, this is definitely an Odyssey, you know, like on a scale from The Wizard of Oz to Return to Oz, this is much more in the camp of Return to Oz. Like, it reminds me even a little bit of like, Alice in this reminds me a little bit of Frieza Bulk in Return to Oz.
That's interesting. I also thought about that when I was watching this. Like, I was remembering Return to Oz more than anything. I was like, wow, it's one of those kind of like quote unquote kids movies, but kind of are not. Or like, if they are for children, it might make children feel a little spooked out and uncomfortable.
Yeah, for sure.
And there's a few.
Yeah,
it's definitely like a 80s Disney thing. If we ever look into the 1980s Disney filmography or something, but they had a lot of darker content that a lot of it's like hit or miss, but Return to Oz was definitely in that camp.
Yes, I remember watching Return to Oz on the Disney Channel.
Yeah, and you definitely cannot find it. I don't think you can find it on the Disney Channel anymore, right?
I don't know if it's on Disney Plus. I mean, it's still on DVD and stuff. We did an episode about it. Go up the feed and look for an episode me and my brother did about it. Because it is also a really interesting film.
That was a great talk.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, obviously, the ultimate version of Alice in Wonderland is the Tim Burton version. I mean, that goes without saying. It's also, he also made the ultimate version of Planet of the Apes. And
What an auteur.
And of course, I'm joking. A lot of his movies are absolutely terrible.
He's an auteur of terribleness.
Yeah.
I'll be honest, I didn't watch the whole Tim Burton Alice in Wonderland all the way through.
Of course, but how could you?
Even with the aesthetic of, no, it's awful, but even with that aesthetic of spookiness or whatever the hell his aesthetic is, it still has this underlying, like, it doesn't hit the way this Alice hits. It doesn't have that childlike, I don't even know what to call it. It's not wonder. What do you think of it?
I think of it as like melancholy in a way. Like, as much as Tim Burton is thought of as like the master of spooky stuff, his stuff really isn't. He's just sort of, he's a stylist. I've always said that. He's like, he would be a great production designer, not a great director. So despite that stuff, I think the only one of the movies that he's ever really been involved in that's like only one of the children's movies that he's ever been involved in that I think is truly that melancholy is Nightmare Before Christmas. And of course, he didn't direct that. No, but like Frankenweenie and his Alice, like they might from a distance look like, oh, this is a sort of spooky version, but it's really not. His version ends up being more of like an action kind of version. You know what? If you're interested in cool versions of Alice, there's a BBC TV movie made in the 60s where it's every character is a professor and it's Alice running around a university, an empty university. And supposedly the idea came from this belief that Lewis Carroll, in sort of the nonsense of the book, was making fun of academia and its jargon. And it's sort of like twisted circular logic. So that's actually a really interesting version of, and I think Peter Sellers is in that version as well.
Do you know if it's like on YouTube or something? Because I'd love to see this.
I don't know if it's on YouTube. It used to be on Netflix like a million years ago. But, you know, that doesn't say much. I think you would probably just look it up as like BBC Alice in Wonderland. It's black and white. It's very cool.
Yeah, that sounds good. I really love when, I don't know if a directors, producers, writer, whoever, takes the source material and like that kind of theme and just runs with it. Because I feel like the problem with Tim Burton is that he doesn't really run with the idea. He just, like you said, he just styles things.
Yeah.
And it's like, when you rip apart all that style and you just look at the base storyline, it's very basic.
Yeah.
It's very, it doesn't really imagine something wonderful. It kind of just lies there flat.
Yeah.
And you can kind of see that with his stupid Planet of the Apes movie.
Yeah, I know.
because there's no style in that. And then you could see how it's just, you know, it's the same beats as like the older story, except spoiler alert from this movie that no one saw, guys. He lands on Earth and then there's apes there. That's the only difference, is like, instead of being on the same planet and seeing the Statue of Liberty, he goes back into his own time and then the apes are already there. But there's no explanation. Like, why did everybody turn into apes?
I don't understand. Lincoln Memorial is an ape, which would imply there was an ape civil war. There was an ape assassination of Abraham Lincoln. I'm sure I'm not the first person to make that joke.
Sure.
Can't be the first person to make that joke.
Yeah, I remember specifically is like the emergency services showing up and they're just like apes in like modern day police uniforms. And I'm like, okay, why are they wearing human 2000s clothing? And anyway, okay, let's go. I can't with this stupid movie.
Something that occurred to me when I was watching this was taxidermy is kind of a perfect metaphor for animation, because it's taking something that's dead and making it alive, right? But it's not alive. It's just the illusion of alive. But you could also extend that and say it's a perfect metaphor for cinema, because even cinema is just dead still images that you're making look alive. And, you know, this movie is mostly stop motion. And stop motion is, I mean, it's a type of animation that, I mean, it's not drawn or anything, but it's a type of animation that completely utilizes what cinema is, which is, okay, we've got 24 still images per second. Let me just move this doll or this rabbit or whatever, 1/24th of a movement every frame, and just take frames and then it moves. I mean, that's really, it's like the old stop motion in some ways is like the oldest trick. But it's also like the most sort of basic understanding of how cinema works. And this filmmaker is so good at it, because even in scenes where things aren't moving, you could tell he was a stop motion filmmaker, because a lot of the compositions remind me of like still life paintings, because there's a lot of stuff, right? Rocks and books and dolls and thread and scissors. And he's so good at like these just extreme close-ups of like perfectly composed things. And everything has to be perfectly composed with stop motion. Everything has to be perfectly locked down and not moving, because you're going to manipulate it and move it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I did want to give a shout out to Jan Sven. I mean, he probably knows this. He's never going to listen to this. But just the dexterity of like how the animals moved was amazing. It was nothing felt stilted. Nothing like... In a way, there were times I almost forgot it was stop motion, because of just the fluid movement. Even with the Alice puppet, when Alice turns into a puppet version of her or a doll version of herself, like there was her little fingers trying to claw up the desk to get the magic, you know, ink drink to turn big again.
Yeah.
And just seeing them move was just so incredible.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, she couldn't get it. It's just really masterful.
He blends it together very well.
I can't even imagine how long it took to do this.
Oh my God. I just was watching a video. Guillermo del Toro has a new Pinocchio coming out and on Netflix, and it's stop motion. But and it looks incredible, but they showed behind the scenes, and all the stop motion dolls have like a metal green like thing holding it up. So you move it for every frame, but the green thing is there so you can digitally remove it. So digital removal makes it so much easier. But this filmmaker did not have digital technology, digital removal. He had to, in the frame, make it work without saying, okay, I'll take something out, which is just makes it so much harder.
I mean, it really just makes it more impressive, right? Like, just how he had it. Or I think about, and, you know, we're jumping all over the place, but I'm thinking when Alice was in the pantry and she was seeing stuff move around, and there was that big hunk of meat that was kind of just crawling around and, like, slithering over things.
Yeah.
That was so gross, but so cool. Yeah.
The pantry scene is definitely was the grossest.
Absolutely. Can I also just...
Yeah.
A shout out to Alice jumping into the desk as like a full, like a you know, 4 foot tall child, and how seamless that looked.
Right.
Like, she just, it's a small desk with just one simple drawer and, like, you know, nothing underneath it. And she jumps in, her little legs are hanging out, and then she just gets, like, kind of sucked in. And that happens like four times. How did they do that?
I think it's, again, a simple trick. I think what you have is the desk that she goes into has no bottom. So when they're really doing it on set, she goes in, but then she just goes out through the bottom. But they've got it matted off, and then they just replace it with a shot of the desk by itself. So you know, you see the air underneath it. You see nothing underneath it. But in reality, she's just going through the desk.
Okay, so it's super simple. Almost like a Georges Méliès thing then, right? Like,
that's yes, exactly. It's all like tricks and toys and gimmicks. It's all like, it's all just like having fun with cinema. Yeah, it's in a certain way, it is fun. So, you know what? So I want to go through her little odyssey. Believe me, it's not going to be tedious, audience, because, you know, it's really just, it's just these steps. It's very simple. So she meets the rabbit. The rabbit runs away from her. We see the floor, the wooden floor of the room. The rabbit's running on the floor, but then it turns into rocks, and then he's outside. And there's a lot of that in this movie. A lot of simple, like you were just saying about Méliès, like simple fucking with movie logic. Like, all you have to do is make the floor change, and now cut to outside, and you transitioned it. Now you're outside, even though it's outside is really inside. He goes into the drawer. Now, there's a recurring motif that I wonder what it means, and I want to know what your thought is.
Okay.
Her opening the drawer, every time she tries to open the drawer, she rips the knob off. It happens every single time. And I'm wondering, is it mean something? Is it just a recurring joke? It literally happens constantly.
Yeah, every time she has to go through the drawer to get to the next step or wherever she is. Honestly, I just thought of it. I was like, well, that's weird. It's happening again and again and again. The only thing I could possibly think of, and this is stretching, is that as a kid, she's not careful. And she's just, you know, I think of it like just in little kid terms. You tell a kid, pet the dog carefully, hold this carefully, and they don't have that grasp yet. Or if Alice is an older child, doesn't care.
Right.
Which kind of fits into her like personality that we get in this movie she just does whatever she wants all the time. It's kind of fantastic.
I'm just thinking off the top of my head, but like maybe like, another way to read it is like, this is like grown up stuff, and she just doesn't know what she's doing. This is like, you know, she gets into the desk and it's this liminal space. It's like as if the desk is this long world, and she's crawling and underneath her protractors and pencils as if it's all like desk world. She ends up in like kind of a cave. She sees like a pail. She sees the rabbit there eating sawdust. Refilling itself. The rabbit's an asshole. She falls ass backwards through a pail and into, like, she's in an elevator. And this is like when she's falling down the hole in the book, because she sees these shelves full of things. In the book, I read a little bit of the book over this week to prepare. In the book, she finds like marmalade and eats it. In this, she finds marmalade, but it's marmalade filled with tacks, which is so scary and weird and gross, but it really fits. There's something about this movie that's so like, oh gosh, I don't... In grad school, I was super a nerd for like cyborgian things and like H.R. Geiger. So part of me wants to be like, it's cyborgian, but it really isn't. But it's definitely like,
mechanical, perhaps?
Yeah, mechanical. Yeah, for sure. For
like
sure.
like pre-cyborg, right?
Yeah,
Like
yeah.
thinking of the mechanical man, or there is that, you know, that trick, the
Yeah.
Mechanical Turk, which was supposed to be like the quote-unquote first robot that would like write.
Yes, yes.
Have you heard of that?
Yeah.
There's something about this that kind of reminds me of that, like not quite robot, not
Yeah.
artificial intelligence, but really just very base mechanical. And
Yeah.
Alice is constantly messing with that. It's like they can't do their functions because Alice is messing it up. And it happens over and over again. It happens with the
Yeah.
Mad Hatter and the hair.
Yeah,
It
yeah. That
happens
scene
with
is like a clock.
King Queen.
That scene is exactly like that, and it's like clockwork because the same things keep happening over and over again in that scene. And the Mad Hatter himself looks like a marionette puppet, but he also has that sort of automaton thing. So yeah, it's definitely, it's not like technological, it's machinery. It's like one thing moves another thing, moves another thing. But that's how
Yeah.
complicated it goes.
Okay, do you want to go back to like the just going through the Odyssey?
Yeah, she falls, she comes out of the drawer. Sorry, she comes out of the elevator, she falls onto a pile of leaves. The leaves animate and they start moving, and they sort of come up, and you see a drawer is inside the leaves. The drawer opens. It's again, it's the same little desk drawer. And all the leaves go into the drawer, and now the room is clean. She opens
That
it
was
up.
cool too.
Yeah, that was really, how crazy must it be to animate thousands of leaves like that? That's nuts.
And to make it like seamless, like a wave. It was like a
Yeah.
wave of leaves going into the drawer. Yeah.
Yeah. So she finds, finds a door, and then the little door that's part of the door, right? So this is that scene. She finds a little key that opens a little door. She looks inside, and it's like a painted garden scene. It's still inside, but it's like painted. And she sees the bunny there. She finds an inkwell and drinks it, right? And this makes her shrink.
Yeah,
But
that
what's
was weird too, because
yes.
it wasn't like one did one thing and one did the other. It was just like whatever form she was in, whatever she drank or ate would change her to the other form. Like, have you noticed that? Like in
Yeah.
the Disney one, and I think in the book, I could be wrong, one was like drink me and eat me, and then they had both two different functions. But in this one, it was just like if she was Doll Alice or Big Alice, whatever she was eating or drinking would just change her.
Well, that's a very interesting thing too, because like in the story and in other versions, she just grows. She grows and shrinks. But in this, when she shrinks, she becomes a China doll. Like it's not like a doll. It's not like a bad special effect where it's supposed to be a doll being her. She clearly becomes an object. And because later on the object grows and then she like comes out of it. Like she becomes the doll big, remember? And then she like breaks out of it.
That was really freaky,
Yeah.
actually.
Yeah, it's
Because
terrifying.
she breaks out of like the chest and the head, you know? It was almost like,
Yeah.
I don't know, like
Yeah.
some sort of parasitic husk thing. It was weird.
She does
But
the
it was
thing where
cool.
she cries and her tears fill the room with water.
And becomes a sea, like almost immediately the adaptation of it's just a sea
Yeah.
with that like rat that
I
uses
love
her
it.
head as an island.
I love all of them are dressed like fancy. Like the rat, or mouse, whatever it is like he's dressed like Blue Boy. It's like all frilly and stuff. And yeah, he climbs up on her head and like makes a campground and campfire in her head. He like puts us, you know, a he cuts some of her hair like it's hay and like lights it on fire. And she eventually she's like, enough of this, and like dunks her head under the water. I could also see a kid being bored by it, and even me like watching it, like some of it like was as interesting as it was. Some of it was like making me like zone out because it's just stuff happening. It's just weird thing after weird thing after weird thing, and you don't know if any of it has any stakes. It's just sort of going.
Yeah, I felt like a little at some point it was getting a little tedious. Like it was interesting, but it's like, why am I watching this? And
Right.
maybe breaking, even though this movie isn't that long, right?
No,
It's
it's like
like
90
an
minutes.
hour or something.
Yeah. No, it's
Yeah.
about an hour
So
and a half.
Yeah, I would say like watching it in 30-minute chunks is kind of interesting. Like, I don't think it's a movie that you lose anything if you don't watch it all the way through. It's just like my like little things, and that can help you like kind of with your, any kind of attention span on that.
Yeah,
And I
you can
realize
watch it
that
in little
my over the
sessions
years
if
my
you want.
attention span has changed. Right, because some things are just kind of cool, but they don't really, no point.
Well, it has no musical score. So there's no it's not composed in any way where there's like music backing any of what you're seeing. There's great sound effects, which again make it feel very tactile and very real. But there's no music, and there's also very little dialogue. So a lot of it is just like images moving.
Oh wow. I didn't even, this is so weird. I didn't even put it together that there wasn't music. And I'm like, I'm so used to being manipulated by music score.
And to not have it there tell you what to feel, right? You're kind of like, I don't know what's going on here. Is this scary? Is it not? Is she scared? Is she happy? You know, it's all kind of just like, I mean, I hate to say it because it kind of means nothing, but it's really kind of like a dream. You know, it's got the logic of a dream. Which again, I don't know what that means either. But like, she goes into one room, and then that leads to another room, and the room looks exactly the same. And it's like, where are these rooms? Where is she really? She seems to kind of recognize where she is, so it seems like it's the interior of her house in some way.
I think when you say dream, and you're right, like it's almost nonsensical because dream logic is always used for a reason, right? So it's just like an explanation. It's kind of lazy in it sometimes. It's like an explanation for why things don't make sense, but then they also kind of make sense. So sometimes dreams are used to really get into an eternal psyche. Sometimes it's like the person needs to go deep in themselves to see something that they can't see when they're awake. And other times it's just weird for the sake of weird. And I think in this case, it really is that. It's just we don't get into Alice's internal psyche. She doesn't have guilt or fear really here. Guilt or fear. We don't even really see joy. It's really just these are the stuff that's in my life all the time, and I'm going to experience them in a different way.
Her forward motion is all I'm chasing the rabbit. From the second the rabbit moves, she wants to talk to the rabbit, and she's chasing the rabbit. And that's really what motivates everything. I mean, she reacts to things as they happen to her, but mostly that's what's driving her. I'm trying to find the rabbit and talk to the rabbit.
What does she want from
I
him,
don't
though? I think
know.
that's something that's never answered, and I don't think it's answered in any Alice adaptation.
I mean, I
What
guess
does she want from this rabbit? Other
yeah.
than if we're going by the dream logic thing, is you're not sure why, but you need something to drive you to where you from A to B to C to
Right,
D.
or like you don't know what's moving you, but it's moving you.
Yeah, and I guess that's kind of laziness of the dream trope, really. It just gets you going. There's no logic. I think that's basically when it hammers down to there's no logic, and that's why it's called dream.
So she finds a kind of like house or castle made out of building blocks. And she goes inside of it. She climbs up. There's like a doorbell. It's on the desk. So there's a doorbell on the leg of the desk. She rings it. A little ladder comes down. She goes up, but she's the little doll at this point. So she goes up it. She goes inside, and inside it looks like a chicken coop, which is very weird. Like there's fences and hay on the ground, and she finds herself like in a room that looks like a room inside of this like castle. And in the closet, she finds like skin and hides and furs. She drinks more ink, and now she grows big. And then this is like, again, I think of Disney, like the famous image of she's like a big in the house, like she's bigger than the houses. But then it gets kind of violent because then like the rabbit comes out with a bunch of really scary like animals that are like taxidermy bodies but skull heads, and they just start like throwing shit at her. Like it's like she's under siege, and they come in like a horse and buggy, but like it's like it's like a lizard that's like a lizard body, but then like it's a lizard skull. Or like a like there's birds where it's birds' bodies with wings and feathers, but then like a bird skull face, and they're making like horse noises, but it's a bird. It's it gets very like scary here. It's very, very crazy. And they're all just kind of like treating her like shit. They kind of corner her, and she's like she runs away, but they catch her and they corner her, and she's backed, and as she's sort of backing away, she falls into a like a bucket of milk, and that's when she grows big, but grows big as the doll. She looks like a big doll, and you can even see like behind the mask of the eye, you could see her real eyes. And then she falls down, and then she kind of rips it open, and she comes out of it. But she's wearing the her dress, and so the doll's wearing the same dress. It's very, again, it's just super odd.
It was and, really creepy. Yeah. That was we're in the pantry. So creepy.
Then we're in the pantry, and now there's, like, bugs and shit.
Yeah. So I'm trying to make sense of my notes. There was actually a part that's almost sweet in a weird way. It's like Alice was fighting back with the animals with that in that castle thing.
Yeah.
I think, and at one point she actually causes one of the taxidermy animals, looks like a little alligator or something, to split open, and he loses all his sawdust.
Yeah.
And the rabbit sews him up and is like feeding him sawdust, like spoon feeding with a funnel to get him back, which is like a moment of care that we don't see from him. And it's, I guess maybe it's something like, you're not like us, right? And that's why he doesn't like her. And but again, that's me stretching, because we don't really get any internal feelings or motives or anything from any of these creatures.
Right.
Stuff happening. But and the sawdust gives them life, right? Gives them life as taxidermy animals with skull heads. So they're in the pantry. Let's get to it.
There's food, but it's not like there's bread, but then the bread has it grows nails out of it, like not like like metal nails. She opens up a can with a can opener, and roaches come out.
Oh, that was gross too. Those were also stop motion roaches.
Were they really?
That wasn't real. I mean, they weren't alive.
Yeah.
The way they moved, it was definitely very like wave-like again. And I think that has to do with Sven Maker's just need for control in that environment. It's also, I'm sure, a lot harder to herd roaches alive than dead. But that's not the first time you see stop motion roaches. I think of those old like silent films. There's a couple that have like roaches doing weird shit.
Or Joe's Apartment. Joe's Apartment from the 90s. It's an MTV movie about a guy who like lives with roaches. It's very weird.
It's disgusting. I hate that movie.
Yeah. It actually triggered me back to a childhood memory I have where I opened up a can of peanuts and there were ants all over it. It was filled with ants, but like they were crawling on the peanuts. And it's because we were on vacation and we had peanuts. And I guess I opened it and put it down on the floor or the grass. And I didn't realize that ants were going to go in it. So I opened it to like get peanuts. And then there's ants. And at the time it was like probably the scariest thing that ever happened to me. And that's what it made me think of. Like, you think you're going to eat something. Like, that's the grossest thing. Like, you're going to eat what's inside here, right? She's opening it as a can and then there's roaches.
Yeah, and the bread, and you also mentioned the marmalade. When she opens the marmalade, there's like screws in it. It's really gross.
Yeah,
and I don't know if it's saying anything other than it's just something happening again that we don't understand.
She opens a can of sardines, but there aren't sardines in it. There's a key in it. So another key. So she opens it. She finds the room where there's a desk in the middle, of course, there's a wooden floor, but there are all these holes that are like burrowed through, and socks are coming in and out of the holes like worms.
Ooh, yeah, that was weird.
And she opens the desk, and in the desk there's eyeballs or fake eyeballs and teeth. I say fake because they could be used for like some sort of taxidermy thing. And one of the socks kind of comes in and grabs the eyes and the teeth and like makes a face on itself, and that becomes the caterpillar. There's a couple times in this where you're like, it doesn't feel like the Alice story, but then it comes into it and you're like, oh, that's the caterpillar. Like, oh, right. This is how we got to the caterpillar. And then in that scene, her socks try to run away from her. And they try to burrow holes down. And she, like, grabs her socks and, like, doesn't let them. It's another odd scene.
And she also, like, blows into them. And they, like, inflate. Like, they're full of air. And they're just full. And that happened a couple of times, which was very strange.
Yeah.
To get them to stop, to go away, I guess. I don't even know what the point of that was, other than look at this thing I can do.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're all just like crawling around like snakes or worms or something, and it's very it's off-putting.
Yeah.
And the caterpillar is sitting on a mushroom, which is actually carved wood.
Yeah.
Right. So it's a mushroom carved out of wood. And he says one part of it makes you big and one side makes you small or something stupid like that. And she breaks it off and it's wood. And you see her like chewing the wood and then she like moves sizes again.
Yeah. Yeah. It's super interesting. The next room is very weird. It almost reminds me of like the cartoon Infinity Train. Like it's like room to room to room to room. And what am I going to find in this room? What oddity am I going to find in here now?
That's exactly it.
In the next room, she finds like a little like dollhouse, but you hear a baby crying in it. And there's like shit being thrown out of the windows and doors, like pots and pans and domestic shit.
Yeah, like the baby's having a fit or something. Right. It's very weird. The baby crying, it just keeps crying and crying.
Yeah.
And it makes me think of like some sort of nightmare kind of domestic thing, right? Where it just won't like stop.
Eraserhead.
Yeah. Oh.
That's what Eraserhead is, right? Man. It's just a crying baby that won't stop. And the nightmare of that.
Yeah. Yeah. And they took that out of the story for the Disney version of Alice. But it's in this one. So it's like a baby's crying.
Is it in the book? I don't know.
And she finally, I think, yeah, it is in the book.
Oh, okay.
Because the baby keeps crying. And then the rat, I don't know if it's the rabbit or a different character, though. It's just like trying to get Alice away from the house and is like throwing stuff at her.
Oh, no, it's a frog. It's a frog dressed in fancy clothing.
Oh, my bad. Okay, yeah, sorry.
It is in the house. And he's wearing a powdered wig. And a fish, also dressed fancy with a powdered wig, comes into the room, and the fish gives the frog, even though Alice is there, it ignores Alice, and the fish gives the frog an invitation from the queen for Alice, but he doesn't give it to Alice, he gives it to the frog. And then the house grows a little bit, and the baby gets thrown to Alice, and the baby ends up being a live pig that runs away.
Yeah, that happens in the book. It's like the baby turns out to be like a piglet and it just runs away, or the baby turns into a piglet, something like that.
Yeah.
Which there's no explanation here. It just stuff happens.
Stuff just
it's absurdist.
I mean, I'm sure there are like theses all over academia of like, you know, Freudian reads and Lacanian reads and Althusserian reads and all sorts of like ways that you could read, you know, maybe the knob that keeps falling off is the phallus. Who knows? I'm sure there's tons and tons of stuff, but who cares? So, so we finally get to the Mad Tea Party, which is probably the most famous scene in the whole narrative. And it's a pretty wild scene. I mean, this alone could be its own short film. In this room, you've got a long table. You've got the Mad Hatter is a wooden marionette whose strings are moving to move him. And he's like, he's got like a beard and like he keeps trying on different hats in front of a mirror. You've got the March Hare, who's different from the White Rabbit. He's actually like a toy, like a doll that's moving, or like a stuffed animal that's moving.
Mm-hmm.
And the March Hare keeps taking stopwatches and putting butter on them and then hanging them on the Mad Hatter's chest. And then the Mad Hatter, it's like you hear the tick 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 of the clock the whole way through, and it really feels like a machine, like a moving clock, because everything just keeps happening. Like the March Hare keeps doing that, the Mad Hatter keeps drinking tea, and the tea pours all over itself. Then it gets up and says, I want a clean cup, and then moves down a seat. And then the hare moves down a seat. And it all just happens again. And Alice comes and sits down, and the Mad Hatter says, "How is a raven like a writing desk?" Which is the famous riddle from this story. And the answer is not given in the story. And I don't think there was an answer from the writer. Years later, Lewis Carroll gave an answer. But also other writers came up with answers. It's weird because it's just a nonsense riddle that really didn't have an answer. But as time went on, people came up with answers for it. The answer that I like the most, and again, none of these are in the story or in the movie. The answer I like the most is Poe wrote on both, a raven and a writing desk. But Lewis Carroll said both can produce a few notes, though they are flat. So there's a bunch of different answers to the riddle, but it's just nonsense. It's just like, I'm going to ask you a crazy thing and there's no answer to it, which is interesting because that too could be a metaphor for like art or cinema. Like, why do you need an answer? I'm just going to ask you a crazy question. Like, why is there a frog dressed fancy with a, powdered wig? And why is the frog got a pet pig? Like, I don't know. Why is the raven like a writing desk? It's here. Let's just deal with it. What did you think of this scene, the mad tea party scene?
I guess the classic kind of definition of madness is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. But I can't tell if the Mad Hatter or the Hare actually expected a different answer. It's just that was their lives. It's just repeating it over and over and over again. I thought it was... It's like a lot of things. I'm like, I'm trying to figure this out, and I'm wondering what happens when the Mad Hatter's chest is so filled with buttered watches that it can't put any more on.
Right.
And I was like, was there any... What happens? Do they fall off? Does the Mad Hatter have so many that he can't move?
Yeah.
Yeah, how does it reset? That's a good question. And because we're kind of just in it and we don't really get an answer. Right. I did think it was weird that the Dormouse was a mink stole. Because that's not a mouse at all. But again, that's it's not taxidermy technically.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
And mink stoles are really gross. I don't know
if
that might be out of time for us, but it's basically a mink is kind of like, I guess, a rodent. So it's almost like a ferret, like a little larger than a ferret.
Mm-hmm.
And what rich people would do, right, is they'd kill the mink and keep it whole. And then you just like wear it over your neck.
Right.
And they still left the little legs and stuff on it. So it's in itself, it's gross.
Yeah.
And the head. Yeah, sorry. The head and the legs and the tail are all still dangling off you as you go off to your opera, your night on the town, your tea party, if you will. So, it just felt very just kind of, I know I'm never going to get an answer for this, but it's going to bother me.
Right. That's interesting. Slavo Žižek would be like, in the film, the mink stole is the patriarchy, and Alice, she is worker, she is proletariat. Some Marxist reading of it.
So, like, what was that for the two of your listeners that know who Slavo Žižek was?
Oh, I'm sure.
I'm sure
there are tons of our listeners who are Žižek heads. Well, we've only got around a couple minutes left, so we're coming to the end here. That scene's amazing because it's just bananas. It's going back to the idea of a machine. It's like it feels like a machine. It feels like what's happening in that room is a machine that just keeps going. She meets the queen. The queen says, "Do you want to play croquet?" The queen is actually a flat image from a card that's cut out. They play croquet with the queen says, "Grab a flamingo," and she grabs a flamingo from a card, like a playing card, and like uses it. But then Alice's flamingo turns into a live chicken, and the pincushion that they're using as a ball turns into a porcupine. There's just stuff happening. And then we go into like the final, the final room, which is kind of like a trial. The king and queen are asking Alice, like, why did you eat the stuff? Why did you do this? Why did you drink that? And everyone else we've met along the way are like watching her, like they're the audience. And they like clap for her and like clang pots when she gives a sassy answer.
Yeah, because she's supposed to read the answer that they give her, right. Which is like, I'm sorry, I'm guilty, and I'm sorry about it.
Right.
And also, everyone are those paper cutouts, which is really a great take on that.
Right, right.
Also, I got to correct you, though. The pincushion turned into a hedgehog, which is a different animal than porcupine. So they're smaller. But that's basically, and they roll up.
It's the same joke. It's an animal with pointy quills.
Yeah, it's the same joke. What I love about the kind of trial ending is when they're all like going to like, you know, it's really threatening and almost scary. Like they're going to, you know, kill her. And Alice is like, I ate the tarts and I'm not sorry. And then she eats more tarts.
I love
it. She's like, F you. Yeah, it's fantastic.
I love this Alice. She's adorable. She's sassy. She won't play by your rules. Like the White Rabbit gives her a script and says, read this. And she's like, I don't believe that. I'm not sorry for anything. And she like barges in and like takes more cookies. And I love it. And then the queen says, off with her head, off with her head. And she starts shaking her head no, but the camera or the composition dissolves. And as she's shaking her head becomes the March Hare's head, becomes the head of the Mad Hatter. Like her head keeps like switching with the heads of everyone she's met. And then she wakes up and she's in the room we first saw her in.
Yeah, with all the stuff around. Right. It's like all the characters are toys and objects again.
Right.
But then she looks over to where the White Rabbit freed himself from the taxidermy exhibit. And he's not there. The glass is broken. And when she pulls up the drawer, his clothes are missing. So it's like, did it happen? Or do?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. And you see the pins in the floor? Like the pins aren't there. Like the pins have been taken out. So it's interesting because it's like a dream, but then like, I mean, at least in my reading of it, it seems very obvious. Like, no, it's not a dream because the fucking rabbit got up and moved and he's still moved.
And he's still moving around. You know, one thing that we didn't talk about that I thought was weird was at one point the hare actually takes the rabbit's like watch and puts butter on it and sticks it on. And the rabbit takes the watch back and he doesn't lick it. But he like wipes the butter off. But it's like all those times he was licking the sawdust. He doesn't want something real.
And he wipes the butter on Alice's socks, which is very gross.
Yeah. This is a very disrespectful movie. Like everyone's just disrespectful to each other, despite the fanciness of the clothes.
Yeah. It's, and I don't mean this to sound like a creepy sexual connotation. It's naughty. It's like Where the Wild Things Are, right? Like when Where the Wild Things Are came out, part of the like quote unquote controversy of it was that the little boy in the story is bad. He bites his mother and he talks back and she sends him to bed. And people said to Sendak, like, you know, you can't have a kid in the story that's like badly behaving. And but like that's what it is. Like everyone's behaving badly in this. Everyone's breaking things and throwing things and disrespecting things.
Oh, I actually love, I wrote that in my notes. I love the aspect of the carelessness of just throwing things when you don't need it anymore and just throwing it around.
Right, right.
Throwing it against Alice, against the wall. And I love that. And I love that there's no moral. I don't want a moral. I don't think children's entertainment has to have a lesson all the time. I think it's just great. Just do weird shit.
Yeah, yeah.
Let kids be bad sometimes. It's okay.
There's no moral. I mean, maybe you could read out of it like, oh God, and this is stretching, but you could read like, just fucking do you. Because that's what Alice does. She does her. She doesn't listen to the script. She's like, I'm not fucking sorry. Like, she doesn't say fucking, but it would be great if she did.
I mean, that's basically what she thinks and acts, though. Yeah, fuck you. I'm going to do what I want. Yeah. I'm going to eat all the tarts.
Yeah. I would suggest to go and watch this. It's in full on YouTube, like a beautiful rip, like not a bad copy. It's like well-preserved on YouTube. And the filmmaker also made a short film adapting Fall of the House of Usher, the Poe story. But there's no humans in it. It's all the house itself degrading with stop motion animation.
Whoa, really, that's interesting. Great.
I actually just today rewatched Coraline, which is made by the same person who made Nightmare Before Christmas, Henry Selick. And I realized like there's a lot of this in Coraline with like the sewing, and even in that, like some things have sawdust in it. I was like, oh shit, that's like Alice.
Do you think that's intentional?
It felt intentional when I saw it today. I can't imagine that a filmmaker, I mean, Henry Selick is a stop motion filmmaker, right? So like he's got to be like someone who worships this filmmaker. You know what I mean? Like it's got to be. Nadia, thank you so much for being here. This was lovely. How is a raven like a writing desk? Who knows?
Thanks, Mike. This was great.
We end every episode by saying
Go bye-bye.